Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Hello everyone and welcome. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you live on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. And we will be talking about some of the wonderful things that the Alliance has been doing for the state of Florida, being part and parcel with some of the new legislation that has just come across and signed by Governor DeSantis. Thank you, Governor DeSantis. If you have not taken time to thank him, please do so, because we rag on our representatives so much. We constantly tell them how awful they are. Isn't it a nice thing to be able to say to somebody, thank you, because they actually did the right thing? When I talk about legislators, I like to talk to a legislator, and my favorite go-to legislator is Mike Hill. He was there. He knows what goes on. He knows the working of the state legislatures and why they are becoming more and more important now. And they are not to take a back seat to the federal legislatures. Actually, they should take the front seat, because it is the states that granted the federal government the power to legislate. It was not the other way around. Our states got together and they said, we will work with a federal government that will control to all of us these 18 enumerated things, of which national security is the highest and most important that they have to handle. And everything else will come back to the states. Well, guess what has not come back to the states? And that would be education. And now our kids are being forced to take in all of that woke garbage, except now in Florida. And it has started with the math books. So, Mike Hill, my go-to legislator, what do you think about the Department of Education actually looking at the textbooks and removing the woke content? Isn't that a good thing?
It's an awesome thing, Karen. And I'll share with you the fact that if there was one blessing in disguise with this whole COVID nonsense, this pandemic, and shutting down our schools, and parents now having to do schooling at home with their children through their computers and so forth, they were able to see what children were being taught. And it is utterly appalling what we see going on. But there are organizations here in Florida who have been fighting what has been being taught to our children in school, even before the COVID pandemic hit. And that's the Florida Citizens Alliance. They were one of them. And when I was in office, they came to me and asked me if I would sponsor legislation to remove pornography from the government-run schools. And we did. I ran that legislation. However, the education staff in the Florida House is very left-leaning, and they were able to block that legislation from getting a final hearing with the education committee. They convinced the education chair at that time to not give the bill a hearing. This is staff, education staff. But at any rate, what we have discovered because of the COVID pandemic and looking closely at what our children are being taught, and I must add that the immediate past secretary for the Florida Department of Education, Richard Corcoran, did a phenomenal job as he was secretary for a brief, I think it's been about 4 years now. And his department decided to remove a number of books, that a number of math books, I think it was a total of 134, I think it was. And 58 of those were in grades K through five. And what those math books were teaching is not 2 + 2 = 4. Instead, they were trying to teach some sort of, they call it social emotional learning, where they are using critical race theory in our math books.
How is that possible? 2 + 2 is always going to be 4.
That's right. But how they tried to gauge it, Karen, which is crazy, they would show a graph, and a graph would show, you know, different heights of income. And the income of the smallest earning income would be a minority group. And then they would ask a question, is this fair? So they're adding, you know, a critical race theory to our math books. And it's insane, utterly insane that it was going on. But thank goodness the Florida Department of Education saw fit to remove those books. And I would add that that's just a start, Karen. We're going to have to be vigilant, keeping our eyes on this, because I'm sure there are going to be more that will come forward and more that we still need to remove.
Absolutely. And folks, one of the great tricks of what the left does on a continual basis is they will take the content of the book, take the cover off, put on this brand new cover, and the content of the book is exactly the same. So Mike is 100% right. You have to see what is going on in your schools. And please don't think, I don't have children in school, why should I pay attention to school? Well, this is a perfect example, what you see right now. And the left is a perfect example of why we have to pay attention to what is going on in school, because these kids grow up. And then what do? They get jobs in the government. And then they begin to dictate to us their stupidity and nonsense that they learned in school. So it becomes a vicious cycle. And everybody, when I was growing up, used to say, but Karen, it's cyclical. What goes up comes down, blah, blah, blah. It's cyclical. Well, you know what? Isn't it time that we break the cycle? And the only way to break the cycle is to stop doing the same things over and over again. So, Mike, we had a transgender teaching from K through 12. And you are right, it was watered down because the original bill would have said no transgender teaching from K to 6. But they watered it down from K to 3, which, as much as I was in disagreement, I was happy that they passed something, because once something is passed, it's easier to add on to it. Wouldn't you think, Mike? We would be able to go back and revisit and maybe next year change it and bring it up to 6 instead of 3. Would it work that way?
Oh, absolutely, Karen. No, you raise a very valid point that, first of all, sex education should not be in government schools at all, period. That education should be done at the home. And if the parents are incapable, then they should do it through the church or perhaps some nonprofit or even profit social group that is willing to take that on. But it should not be done in our government schools. So as you say, the bill originally, I believe it went K through sixth grade. I could be wrong.
No, it was, the original was K through 6. You're correct.
And then we have a Speaker of the House who is Representative Chris Sprouse, who in my mind is not a conservative. He's more a moderate. And he was able to cave and move it down to K through third grade. You cannot, and it doesn't say don't say gay. What the bill says is you cannot discuss sexual orientation, sexual identity, or any other inappropriate sexualization material to kids in K through three. And so you think about that, Karen, that these are four-year-olds, K-5 can be as young as four-year-old, up to third grade, who could be as young as 8 years old. So they're saying that you can't discuss that with them. Well, good. But now yes. We're going to fourth grade, and fourth graders can be 8 years old, 9 years old. They should not be exposed to that material either. So you're right. There's going to be further work that has to be done on this. And like you, I'm glad we got that done. But next session, it must come up. And I would say that you go for the home run. Don't go up to the sixth grade. Go through K-12. Remove sex education out of the public schools.
Absolutely. And you know what, folks? It's not sex education, because sex education really comes through biology. I remember teaching biology, and when we taught biology, we taught about reproduction. That's part of sex education. We also taught hygiene, and that was part of sex education. But I cannot imagine myself sitting down with a group of kindergarten kids and saying, my name is Karen Schoen, and I'm a heterosexual, and I have sex with my husband, and then go into a whole dissertation of my sex life. Why would I ever want to talk to somebody I didn't know about my sex life, let alone a child in kindergarten? Think about that, folks. Can you imagine doing that? That's exactly what they want us to do. Now, the worst part of this all is that this represents 0.03% of the population, 0.03%. So they are expecting 99.97% of the population to adhere to what 0.03% of the population wants. What kind of a democracy is that? I thought they keep on telling us we live in a democracy, and when democracy is in place, then the majority rules. Well, if the majority rules, then why are we teaching sex ed, transgenderism in kindergarten through third grade, or even in all the way up through high school? Mike is 100% correct. This does not belong in our schools. And really, all SEL is, which is social emotional learning, is just a fancy word for critical race theory. So nothing has changed again, except the words. And that's what they like to do, play with words. And as a result of them playing with words, they confuse us, which is their other, what they want to do. Confuse the masses so that they will have no options and only be able to listen to what the quote government says. So we had a special session. Mike, could you explain what a special session means, what it is? Some people don't know.
Yes, Karen, a special session is when there's legislation that needs to be addressed, which was not addressed during the regular session. In Florida, the regular session will last for 60 days. Prior to that will be some committee weeks where bills are being written, bills are being presented, and sometimes voted on during committee week. But the majority of the work is done during regular session. And so during those 60 days, in this past session, which is typical, over 3,000 pieces of legislation, bills, were brought forward, were written. But less than 300 actually were passed and became law. Let me say that differently, were passed. Not all of them have become law yet. The governor still needs to sign on them, or he can veto a number of those. So an important piece of work did not get done during the regular session. So a special session was held just to address Initially, it was to address only one issue, but the governor added another issue to it as that special session started.
Okay, so the special session focused on Disney and on redistricting. And those were not addressed, what you were saying, those were not addressed in the regular session. So that is what the governor did. And this can be done in any state. Many states have special sessions where they bring their legislators back. And mostly, I would imagine they focus on a single issue. Would that be correct, Mike?
Mostly they do. And if I can add, if I can correct myself on this, Karen, the special session was originally called for redistricting, for redrawing the district maps. Those maps were actually done. That work was done during session. However, the governor did not like those maps. And so he called a special session to redraw those redistricting maps, which was the correct thing to do, in my mind. So the governor has the authority to call a special session, but it has to be agreed upon by the Senate president and the Speaker of the House. And they did agree to that, to hold a special session to redraw the district maps. And then while they were in that special session, it was added to it the idea of removing the special tax breaks and a special district that Disney was receiving down in the central part of Florida. And that was also passed. So I think two very good things took place.
I agree. Now the Disney, this was something that was not brand new. This didn't just come out of the air just because of what Disney said. Was this not being investigated? Because in all fairness, why was Disney getting breaks like that when none of the other corporations were?
Absolutely. This started back in, well, the special district that Disney received was started in 1967. And it gave them something like 25,000 acres of land that they would govern themselves, that they would provide their own fire services, their own police, their own taxing district. All that was contained within that. And there were many other entities, companies in the state of Florida who also wanted that same type of treatment and just couldn't receive it. So yes, this has been looked at on and off for many years, but it all came to a head this session. And I think it is because what precipitated that was Disney making the utter crazy mistake of challenging the law that says you will not teach sexual orientation or sexual identity to children in K-3. Disney came out as a corporation and said, we are going to fight this. We're going to overturn this. We're going to help with the lawsuits and anything we can do. We are going to stop this. They stepped outside of their lane. They went out of bounds. And that precipitated the legislature with the governor's help to say, okay, then we're removing your special district and your special tax breaks that you have been receiving for so many years now.
Well, I believe that if we take a look at our corporations, when corporations were set up in America, they were not supposed to be involved in politics. That was kind of a quiet separation of government from business. Government, yes, did regulating, but government was not supposed to be involved in the workings of the business, just as the business was not supposed to be involved in telling the government what to do. And Mike is right. Disney stepped way out of its lane when it decided that it was going to override the people. Now, that's what's important, Mike, because those legislators, they're representing the people. They didn't go there and dream this up by themselves, did they?
No, not at all. This was the legislation to remove this sexual identity and sexual orientation education from school came from citizens. It wasn't a legislator who said, hey, I have a great idea. No, it was brought to them by citizens in Florida who were made aware of what was going on in school because of the pandemic and say, we must put a stop to this. And they brought it to a legislator who then sponsored the legislation. And to his credit, and I'm sorry, Karen, I can't remember his name right now, a representative, to his credit, money that had been given to him by Disney, he returned. And he was the first to do it. And I understand that there have been other legislators who have returned money to Disney also, even though it's only been a small handful. But I know for a fact, Karen, because I was there, Disney gives money to practically every legislator. Disney has 5 PACs. And typically what they will do is write $1,000, which is the maximum in Florida, $1,000 from each PAC. So many, many legislators receive the maximum of $5,000 from Disney every year.
Well, I happen to think that there's too much money involved in the elections, and money, as we are learning, can sway opinions. And that's the way it's being used. And knowing full well how much these people lie, this is, to me, a perfect example of the way government is supposed to work. And that is, the people learn something, the people get fed up, the people direct their representatives to follow their request. That's the whole key. That is the beauty of our Constitution. That is the way our government works. And then the legislators meet in committee and they say, this is a worthwhile cause, this is not a worthwhile cause because we have much opposition to it, or this is a worthwhile cause, we have much support for it. And then they go forward and write and vote on the legislation that the people requested. But guess what, people? If we don't request, we don't get. And that's been our problem for way too long. How important is it, Mike, that the people are in contact with their legislators?
Oh, it's vital, Karen, because if you do not, then what you're going to find is that special interest will control what happens to the legislative body instead of what we the people want. It is so important. Now they are out of session, so they are back in their district. Now is the time to see them. Call and insist to have an appointment with your elected official, not with the aide and not with their secretary. You want to have a meeting with your elected official, either state senator or state representative, because now that they are out of session and in district, you have more time with them. You can have at least a half hour, if not more. But when they're in session, you get 5 minutes or less. So now is the time to do it. Make them aware of what you expect from them. And oh, by the way, all state representatives are up for election this year. Many of them have a primary, and many of them will also have a general election. Now is the time to make them aware of what you want and what you expect from them. And if they are not receptive, then you have the power as a voter to go find someone else to run against them and help get that person in office.
Also, when you are speaking with your legislator, the most important thing that you can remember is to be polite, to be precise. Go there with notes. There's nothing wrong with having notes written on a paper so that you can direct the conversation and get your message told, because that's the purpose of this. and then become so friendly with your legislator, like I did with Mike, so that your name and number becomes on their speed dial. And when you call them, they get to say, "Hello, Karen, nice to hear from you," because that's the kind of relationship you want to have. You don't want to go and beat them up and tell them all the hot things that they're doing wrong and what everybody else is doing wrong. You want to guide them on solutions. That's the purpose of this, is to have them recognize what's happening and to use you as a resource for that particular program, problem, whatever it happens to be. You want to be the go-to person. Mike, you had lots of go-to people, and that's what made you so successful. But isn't that an important thing, that you keep in contact with your legislator?
Absolutely. And you hit all the key points, Karen. When you go, you want to be polite, you want to be precise, and you want to be concise. All of those are important. And as you say, when that happens, then you become an important go-to resource. So not only, Karen, that when you call me and you're on my speed dial, I say, "Hello, Karen," if I need to get some information or need to know what the pulse is out there in the district, I can call you and say, "Hey, Karen, what do you think about this particular issue? What are you hearing?" So it works both ways. That's why it is so important to build that mutual respect with each other. And by the way, Karen, the governor is looking at calling another special session coming up in a week or so to address the homeowners insurance issue in Florida right now, which is in a big trouble because of the amount of lawsuits. The trial attorneys have decimated the insurance, homeowners insurance market in Florida, and it must be addressed.
Oh, and I can tell you folks how true that is. And we're going to have you come back, Mike, and talk about that, because I am one of those people that was guided by a corrupt attorney who actually gave my insurance company the wrong information. And the case was closed on the wrong information. So I believe the insurance companies, sure, they don't want to pay the whole amount, blah, blah, blah. That's insurance companies. But I think the attorneys are making it worse. And that's another conversation. Mike, I want to thank you so much. You are such a wealth of information. So therefore, you'll have to come back again, because I enjoy talking to you and my audience loves listening to you. So please tell everybody where they can find you. And should there be a legislative question, I know you'd be open to helping them answer.
Absolutely. And Karen, it's always an honor and pleasure to be on your show. So thank you for having me. But if people want to contact me, they can go to MikeHillConservative@gmail.com. MikeHillConservative@gmail.com.
Folks, you have someone that you can talk to that's been there, done that, and can give you the right answers that you are looking for to help you in whatever project you are looking for. And if you should be afraid to speak to your legislature, which I cannot imagine anybody being afraid in this day and age, but if you happen to be one of those people and you don't want to really talk to them, but you want your message heard, then please call them in the middle of the night, because they have an answering machine and you don't have to talk to anybody. You just have to leave your message. And usually what happens when they come in is that the staff will go through the messages and they'll see pro, con. And that gives the legislator an opportunity to investigate what it is that they are what it is that their issue is, and to see how their constituents feel about it. So keep in touch with your legislator. They did not get elected to ignore you. Remember that. They are there to serve you. They are your servants of the government. Thank you, Mike. It has been a pleasure as always. Folks, you're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. And right after the break, we'll be talking to Pastor Rick, who will tell us what the Alliance is up to now.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Look, I'd like to make a rocket science out of it, but I can't. Povidone iodine nasal sprays work by reducing the viral load, reducing the viral burden, and making it easier for your body to overcome all these airborne pathogens. Do yourself a favor. Check out the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use the promo code OUTLOUD to stay protected and get 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Welcome, everyone. It is such a shame to see the leaks that are happening in our government. It is like nothing is sacred anymore. And that is really a shame, because we send legislators and we choose our justices, and they have to have a chance to be able to actually digest and figure out what a bill is, what it's going to be. And by leaking information, we're short-circuiting what's really happening. Not only that, we're also leaking erroneous information. This is going to be a very, very big deal, regardless whether or not the Supremes stick to their concept of what was in the draft, or even if they change it. Because now, if they change it, who knows whether they're changing it because of their belief or because they've been threatened? Who knows what? So we have a lot of history behind some rulings in our Supreme Court that have been changed. Remember, these are people and they make mistakes as well. So let's talk about some of that. You're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, where we will educate you on the truth and on what is really happening in this great country. And my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance, who has been so busy this year getting wonderful bills passed on parental choice. That was amazing. And now the parents in Florida actually have a choice as to what can be taught in their children's schools, keeping away from all of the transgender garbage that seems to be hitting us right in the face. This is Karen Schoen, and we are on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. And Pastor Rick, thank you for joining me. What is going on in the Supreme Court? Imagine the private messages of the justices before they even get to make a decision, before they even get to digest anything is being leaked. What do you think about that, Pastor?
Well, it's quite a remarkable turn of events. I don't remember anything quite like this. There may have been, but I don't remember anything quite like it. At the beginning, I mean, we have to think about the significance of someone leaking internal information from the Supreme Court. Now, there's always a certain amount of judicial stuff that's public. The hearings are public. When people make arguments before the Supreme Court, those are public. And people hear what the justices ask and they hear the answers. All of that is public. But then when a decision needs to be made, that is often, or always, I shouldn't say often, it's always done behind closed doors and often part of a process where they process the information, they take tentative votes, they talk about it, they write memos or opinions, and it's circulated until they finally come to the end of their process and release their ruling. The worrisome thing about the leak is that we need our justices to be able to do all of the work of processing the decisions and of having the conversations. We need them to be able to do that in a confidential way without fear of being exposed, because there's something important about them having the opportunity to speak frankly to each other and to circulate documents that speak frankly. And for this to be leaked is worrisome, because it violates the sanctity of that process, and we should all be concerned about that. I'm not saying all of this because of the issue at hand. I'm saying that we just need to carefully consider the dynamics and the consequences of leaking. And part of what's going on now, not only is it worrisome with the leaking, but part of what's going on is an attempt to marshal public pressure to get them to change, because they've said that the leaked document was an authentic draft. And so if they're going in this direction, and as people suspect, the leaker disagrees with the decision, then it's clearly an attempt to get public outrage of one kind or another, not from me for sure, but from those who so rabidly support what they call abortion rights. They want them to be able to rally the forces and maybe put political pressure on the justices. And our system has plenty of opportunity for political pressure to be applied, but not at the Supreme Court level. And that makes it extremely worrisome just because of the process.
Absolutely. And unlike what goes on in our local councils, where the sunshine must be shown at all times and the commissioners always have to do everything in the light of day, letting their constituents see their rulings and what's going on, the Supreme Court meets, and they meet and talk about all of the rulings that are being made before the rulings are made. So they have a chance to tell the other side what their issues are and maybe persuade them to make a difference. And when that's taken away, the discourse is taken away, the freedom of speech, of being able to say how you feel and being able to persuade someone else to visit what you are saying, is taken away. And when that's taken away and you don't have two sides of an issue and everything becomes one-sided, which is what this regime is pushing, you never can have fairness in any type of decision, because it's always going to be one-sided. And as a result of that, look at what the Democrats are doing now by going around and saying, this will end women's rights to have an abortion. No, it won't. It will only do exactly what the Constitution says. The Constitution does not mention the word abortion anywhere in the Constitution. So that's number one. And number two, the 10th Amendment says if it's not in the Constitution, then it goes back to the states. Why are the Democrats so afraid of having the states, the people, participate in this incredible decision? Why would you think they're so afraid, Pastor?
Well, obviously they're afraid because they think some of the states will outlaw abortion. And a lot of us hope they will. I guess it's particularly worrisome that they believe they need the heavy hand of the federal government held over the states with threats of who knows what if they step out of line. And that's partly what they got out of the Roe v. Wade decision. And now the states are allowed to act the way they should have always been allowed to act, independently and on their own. Now, there's reason for concern with that, because as everybody can imagine, there are states that will vigorously preserve what they call abortion rights. They will not put any restrictions on it because their political elected leaders have decided that that must be preserved at all costs. And so those of us who are concerned about the death of so many babies, that will still go on in those states. Now, we hope that the other states that have been saying we're pro-life, we just can't do anything because of the federal government and specifically the Supreme Court decision, we hope that those states will immediately step up and pass strong pro-life legislation that the governors will sign and to preserve the lives of the children in those states. Is that a perfect situation? Well, no, not if you care about saving lives everywhere, but it is the system that we have in this country where the states are supposed to be allowed to be independent. That's why we call them a state. They are they're an independent political state that can act in its own best interest, and they should be allowed to pass that legislation. Now, we will see if this decision comes down the way the draft indicates. We will see then whether our leaders in these states, the political leaders, the members of the state Senate and state House and the governors, whether they actually will do what they've pledged to do. Will they stand up and will they pass, sign into law, strong pro-life legislation that preserves the lives of children? This is where it's really going to become important for everybody that cares about this. You got to pay attention to your state, because if the Supreme Court puts aside Roe v. Wade, then it's all up to the states. And we have a good chance of winning, but we also have a very good chance of holding the people that do or don't do the right thing accountable. That we must do.
Yes, and paying attention to the election process is exactly how we do that. And we have a good start because the elections this past week, the primaries this past week, showed that the candidates that won were most of the candidates that President Trump has supported. Why would he support them? Because these are people that believe in America and do not believe that the country is going in the right direction, obviously, and that they want to go to DC to make a difference. And they have pledged to do that. So now it's going to be up to us to make them accountable. And of course, this is just the first round because this was the primary. We will have the face-off in November. But it does look like the America First candidates are the ones who are on the winning side. And that is going to be a good thing for our country because as Biden has put in place the most insane regulations that we have to follow, we are going to need strong people in both the House and the Senate to say, no, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to give you the money. You can do whatever it is that you want to say you're going to do. But guess what, folks? If you don't have the money, your program is not going anyplace. And I believe that that is exactly what's going to happen. In the meantime, it's going to be up to us, we the people, because the America First movement also demands that the states exercise the rights that they have, which is anything that's not mentioned for the federal government. So the states have a huge responsibility in taking care of its citizens, and we the people have a huge responsibility to make sure that the, quote, right people get in office. And many of them are supporting the America First agenda, which is what they should be supporting. Remember, folks, if you build a house on sand, it's not going to stand. It's going to crumble. The foundation must be strong. And over again, America has demonstrated that when America is strong, the world is strong. And when America is weak, the world is weak. And one of the things that I have been most concerned about, Pastor, is every time I open up one of my pages to read the news, I get a blurb and I get an article that says we're going to be having massive food shortages. So, Pastor, what can people do? What would you suggest that your congregation do in order to prepare for what's going to be happening, because the interest rates are going to go up, which means inflation is going to be higher again, and they're predicting food shortages. How is that going to be possible in America? Are we going to have food shortages?
Well, I think that it's certainly possible, And I think people should be listening to what they're saying and also listening to what they're not saying. One of the things that Americans tend to forget is that the whole business of food availability is affected by the worldwide market. And so when we hear talk about this, we think, well, that's going to happen over there someplace. We've never had that happen here. Well, that's probably true. We have been truly blessed and not to have struggled with a lot of these kind of things. But when you consider that some of these things that are restricting the supply of food are affecting the world market, that's going to make the demand will not go away. It's going to make the supply much more difficult to distribute, and it's going to probably cost more. I think what people can do on the short term by an easy step or two is start buying. If you buy rice, you'll always be able to cook it. You know, if you can't get other things, then you can buy these kind of things ahead. I heard a friend of mine talk about buying canned meat. Well, I don't know much about food, but I had never really paid attention to canned meat other than tuna. But those are the kind of things that people need to think about. Maybe they should get ahead on. And it doesn't hurt to have a supply of that. I realize short term, you got to have the money to buy it. And I'm not unaware of that. But over time, even if you don't need it, you'll be able to use that up and you won't have lost anything if you buy things that are not perishable and that you can fix when you need to. I think people need to take that seriously. Many nations have suffered down through the years over food shortages. And our country has been fortunate not to be in that situation, but people need to pay attention. And maybe as simple a thing as if you've not had a garden, maybe you want to have a garden this year and get ahead that way. Maybe if you've never gotten fresh vegetables and canned them yourself, maybe you want to consider doing that. I remember my mother did that, canned and froze things. I couldn't believe how much work she put in on that. Of course, I was a kid. I didn't realize even the full extent of it, but it might be time for people to reconsider some of those kind of things and realize that it may not be as simple as going down to the local grocery store, because if they can't get it, we can't get it. But if we can look out for ourselves and our neighbors, that's a good way to help get us through this, what looks like a looming crisis on the food problem. And it could happen as early as August from some things I'm hearing.
Well, Pastor is absolutely right. And I believe strongly that this is a perfect time to work with your neighbors. And maybe one of you grow tomatoes. Wouldn't that be terrific? While somebody else is growing green beans, and then you share in what you're growing. So you're forming a co-op, and each of you is responsible for your particular vegetable or fruit or whatever it is that you happen to be growing. But anything that you do will supplement your income in food, and that's very important. If there are farmers nearby, go around and see if there's a U-pick, if there's a way that you can get the vegetables. And as Pastor said, canning, dehydrating, air drying, all kinds of new things have happened recently in equipment that makes gathering food and keeping it together and keeping your family fed, that is going to be of utmost importance. But also protect yourself in your home, because this is going to be a situation of extreme strife. Judging from the past, which unfortunately most people don't know, there were massive food lines of people waiting online to get their handouts from what the government had. So we want to avoid that in our own communities and do things that will assist our own communities so that we are not waiting for the federal government, for FEMA, who is always notoriously late to every party. So folks, you have to take care of yourself. And I'm going to give a quote from a sheriff in Santa Rosa County. There was a rash of home invasions, and one of the recipients of this home invasion actually shot the invader. And when the invader was caught, the sheriff didn't know who shot them because there were so many home invasions. But he said, "I want to thank you, basically, for doing this. And please understand, the person who shot this man is not in trouble, because we believe in Santa Rosa County that our citizens have the right to be armed. They have the right to protect their homes and their businesses. And we are even offering a class every other Saturday on home protection. Please feel free to shoot anyone who comes into your home, because your home is sacred and you'll be saving the taxpayers a lot of money. Now, coming from a sheriff, how many sheriffs have the ability to say that? How many believe it? This is who we should be looking at for our sheriffs. These are the people who we should be holding them to the fire. What will you do if my home is invaded? What rights do I have? Are we following the Constitution? Do I have the right to protect my home in this county? What happens if the federal government comes in and says, we want you to pick up everybody's guns? Will you, as the sheriff, pay attention to the Constitution, or will you be beholden to the federal government? This is a very important election, and many sheriffs are up for re-election. So asking them the right questions is of utmost importance. That's what we have to do. We have to make sure that when our candidates come before us, we vet them, we ask them the tough questions. What would you think we should be asking them? Shouldn't we be asking them on what their stand on abortion is? What do you think, Pastor?
I think we should ask them every question that occurs to us to ask them. I don't think anything should be off limits. They're applying for a job, and we're deciding whether we like them as our elected official, whether it's sheriff or anything else. So we shouldn't be reluctant to ask them questions. I also think that sometimes people are more focused on the issues, and they forget some of the deeper things that we need to think about. Now, I don't mean to minimize that the issues that are top of mind today should be ignored. And if there are issues in your area that people are talking about and you want to know, then yes, you should find out whatever the office is, you should find out their position on those issues. At the same time, you also need to remember as a voter that whoever you elect will serve in that office for a period of time. And there will always be things, usually it's more than one, and sometimes they're very significant things that come up that nobody could have anticipated. And so they will then have to make a decision. That decision will be based on their moral principles and their understanding of that which is right and that which is wrong. So when we evaluate candidates, it's not just the issues that are top of mind today. It's also an attempt to find out what really makes that candidate tick. What helps them understand this is right and this is wrong? And is that the right perspective to have? Because if they have the wrong perspective, even if they're correct on the issues today, they could get us in trouble later because we haven't thought that through and realized that there will always be things come up. And we need people who are prepared to handle the unexpected based upon the right kind of principles, the right kind of moral outlook. That is absolutely significant and must not be overlooked.
Absolutely. And one of the groups that will not let anything be overlooked is the Florida Citizens Alliance. We worked very hard, and now we are seeing the fruits of our labor being recognized as the Florida Department of Education is now removing woke content from textbooks. And this is a lot due to the work of the Alliance. Pastor, what is the Alliance going to be looking forward to for next year?
Well, we're starting to think about some of those kinds of things. And one of the things that we're working on right now are some school board candidate forums to help people realize that who we elect makes a huge difference. And that's happening all across Florida. We hope people are paying attention to their school boards. Sometimes those elections get overlooked. And between now and election time, we're not telling people who to vote for. We don't endorse candidates. We help people understand what the candidates have to say and help them make the kind of decision that they'll be happy with. But that cannot be overlooked. That's hugely significant. There are other legislative things that are beginning to crop up. I was talking to a state representative just last week, and he had an idea for some apprenticeship things that would help education. And I thought it was a great idea and something that we need to work on. And he tried to get it done last year or and during session, but it didn't happen. So he's looking at it again. And I suggested to him we need to have some conversations to see how we might support that, because we want to help students have all kinds of opportunities. And the idea of apprenticeship sounds a little old-fashioned to some people, but it actually is the pathway in some of these more technical industries for students to get in on the ground floor and to learn while they're working, because things change so quickly that the schools aren't equipped to help them keep up with the changes. But if they can get an apprenticeship and get started working with a company, they can learn what's happening now and keep up with what continues to happen while they're getting whatever other education they need in English and social studies and all of those kind of things. They can pursue a degree if they want to, but this is a huge step in the right direction, both potentially for university level students and potentially for high school students that can have an opportunity to learn while they're working and get a leg up when they could not do that through the traditional means. I thought he had a brilliant idea, and I'm interested in exploring that with him. So that's one of the things we're working on.
I think that is a fabulous idea, and it is something that absolutely is needed. And these jobs that Pastor is talking about, they are high ticket jobs because these people are skilled and they are being paid and rewarded for their skill. So college is not the answer for everyone. You have a perfect model of Bill Gates. He never went to college. He went to college for, I think, 6 months, and then he developed Microsoft in his garage. Those are the kinds of people that we need to promote again. And showing and using apprenticeships as a way for kids to get into an amazing amount of different types of industries and careers would be a fabulous thing, because I truly believe that the majority of the kids that are in gangs because they never got the options that we should be giving our kids right now. Well, Pastor, we are at, unfortunately, the end of our show, and it is always a pleasure to speak with you and find out what the Alliance is doing. And folks, go to the Alliance website, and that is goflca.com. See what's happening in Florida, and by all means, take them to your state. Modify what we're doing. Tell us what you're doing, because that will help us as well. We need to work together, but we also need to work as states separately and choose the right path that the citizens that are living in that state want. And that's what we have to look forward to. Pastor, a prayer would be very welcome.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Let's turn our minds and our hearts in God's direction, and let's pray. Father, we begin today by giving you thanks for the way you've cared for us over time. We have been so blessed that we often just take it for granted and think it could be no other way. But now we hear of potential difficulties of all kinds, including these apparently looming food shortages, and we are cautioned to make preparations. Help us not to make preparations out of panic or undue fear. Help us to make preparations out of caution and doing what's right for ourselves and our families. Help us to always have that confidence in you that will see us through. But in the meantime, guide us in making the right choices and preparing for our families, and help us with our children, because they have many opportunities before them and many challenges. Help us to do the right thing for them in our education system and in every opportunity, for we want to serve them as though we were serving you. And we want to give you thanks for the way you have helped us and will continue to. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Folks, you have been listening to the Prism of America's Education, brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. This is the time when we have to come together and act as Americans. We have many things facing us, many issues, but if we work together, we will be strong, we will succeed, and we will know that America is worth saving. Have a wonderful week, and I will see you again next week.
But I've always been proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me.